What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Ilan Carr, past Supreme Master of Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity, discussing Jewish fraternities today. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Too Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. In Jewish tradition and law, there's an entire area devoted to the ethics of speech. Our scholars teach we should refrain from attacking others, never make innuendos about their conduct, should even avoid implying that people are less moral than they are or should be. Even the mildest forms of public rebuke are discouraged, lest we shame others. We're instructed in Judaism as good human beings to avoid slander, harsh criticism, and judgmental public comment on others, including those with whom we disagree. Lashon hara, unethical speech, is considered to be totally immoral. All of which makes the presidential campaign of 2016, which comes to a conclusion this coming Tuesday, something beyond moral comprehension in a Jewish sense. We have seen what can only be described as one of the longest, ugliest, and most unprincipled public spectacles in American history unfolding in the past 18 months or so. Slander, insult, and humiliation are the main weapons employed in virtually every advertisement aired. Whole speeches are dedicated to ridiculing opposition candidates. Every act and statement is filled with brutal allegations against the opponent, often unfounded, with actual threats of physical violence or criminal prosecution made publicly, at least by one side. And the nadir it is sinking towards in its last days is truly depressing. There is very little that is honorable, principled, or ethical in any of this. It is, frankly, horrifying. It does nothing to make anyone proud to be an American. And Judaism stands firmly against this conduct, and does so eloquently. The leading Jewish figure in the area of ethical speech was a man with the honorary name of the Chofetz Chaim, a title that comes from his great book of that name. It's taken from the verse in Psalms, "Who is the person who desires life, Hechafetz Chaim, who loves his days and seeks only goodness? Guard your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Shun evil, do good, seek peace, and pursue it." The author's name was Yisrael Meir Kagan, and he published his book about Lashon Hara, evil speech, almost 150 years ago. It is more relevant today than ever. As the Chofetz Chaim said, we must always hold the reins of the animal within us. Lashon hara is any form of speech or communication that can harm someone else emotionally, financially, physically, or damage their reputation. In other words, everything that's currently being said, advertised, and implied in this presidential election, plus everything that's being said in senatorial, congressional, gubernatorial, and, well, every other election going on. Having said all that, I have to add that Lashon Hara is something that all of us need to be conscious about and avoid. It's not only candidates for public office and their representatives who shouldn't be slamming others. All of us have a responsibility to consider carefully what we say about other people. Speech can do real damage. As the Talmud says, unethical speech destroys three people: the person about whom it is said, the person who says it, and the person who listens to it. Just say no to Lashon Hara. This election will be over in a couple of days, but the damage it has caused will not. If any good is to come from this firestorm of invective, it will come from ordinary people, you and me, choosing not to speak in this way anymore or approve this kind of speech. May this be God's will and ours. On a very different subject, last week we had Rabbi Capers Fanay as our guest here on Two Jewish, discussing the International Israelite Synagogue Movement, of which he is now the chief rabbi. A deeply loyal listener and friend, Gladys Handfling, emailed us to share a memory of her own youth in New York. She wrote, "Many years ago, when I was in my early teens, I had a girlfriend who lived in Brooklyn. I was invited to spend a weekend with her family, and since they were very Jewishly observant, my parents allowed me to do so. Her family, of course, lived within walking distance of the shul, and after Shabbat services, she and I took a walk. Suddenly, we heard beautiful voices singing in Hebrew, and we stopped to listen. My friend told me that this was the Black Shul. We stood a bit longer to hear them, and I asked if we could go in. My friend said no, and I always regretted that I didn't insist. Your show today brought back a very pleasant memory for me. I wonder how many of us have had similar experiences and taken the time to go in and explore a different Jewish culture. It is always incredibly rewarding." To play us in this morning, in that spirit, here is a prayer from the Jews of a very different culture, the Abayudai of Uganda, and their version of Hine Matov, how good it is and pleasant for us to be here together.
Laba we kulyo kulungi we kusanyusa Abo Luganda okutula Laba we kulyo kulungi we kusanyusa Abo Luganda okutula Hine matovu umanaimu Cheveti achim gam yahadu Hine matovu umanaimu Cheveti achim gam yahadu Lava we kulyo kulundi we kusanyusa Abo Luganda okutula Lava we kulyo kulundi we kusanyusa Abo Luganda okutula Hine matovu umanaimu Cheveti achim gam yahadu Hine matovu umanaimu Cheveti achim gam yahadu.
That was the Ugandan Jewish community, the Abayudaya, singing Hine Matov. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish, Ilan Carr, is a past Supreme Master of the only officially Jewish fraternity existing in America today, Alpha Epsilon Pi. Find out why AE Pi has remained Jewish when so many other formerly Jewish fraternities have gone other directions. When we return in just a moment here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
It's everything you wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's Taste of Judaism program is now in its 17th year and explores Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community. This free introductory class taught by our rabbis is immensely popular throughout Southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, Taste of Judaism brings to life Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. It'll help you rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism.
Classes are free and open to all and include Jewish snacks. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year at Splendido as well. The whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class, starting soon. It's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email Mila, M-I-L-A, at tetucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish this morning, Ilan Carr. He is the past international president of Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity, AE Pi Fraternity, the only officially Jewish fraternity still going. Served as a regional governor, as a chapter advisor, and we're here to talk about fraternities and Jewish fraternities today. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I should note that I am a brother of Alpha Epsilon Pi. I was an AE Pi at UCLA about the time Moses was leading the Israelites out of Egypt, and was a chapter advisor at UC Santa Barbara and a life member of AE Pi. So there, I'm not without some bias, but it's great to have you here. Ilan, tell us a little bit about why AE Pi has remained a Jewish house when the other fraternities have often changed that designation.
Happy to do that, but first I have to say how proud we are to call you our brother. When we see our alumni leading the Jewish people as you are, it is the best of AEPI, and it fulfills our best aspirations. So thank you for your leadership, and thank you for representing our fraternity so well. And on the subject of our fraternity, yes, we are the last remaining Jewish fraternity. There used to be almost 20. There used to be 17, 18 Jewish fraternities in the 1920s. And perhaps as a metaphor for large segments of the Jewish population, those fraternities either went out of business or assimilated one by one. A lot of it was because of environmental pressure. Some of it was because of the need to fill beds in houses where you need to make a certain target in order to pay a mortgage or rent. But a lot of it was also ideology, the notion that, well, you know, Jews are now getting into other fraternities. Most Jewish fraternities were founded because Jews were not allowed into other fraternities. A lot of these organizations said, well, it's passé. You know, Jews now get bids elsewhere and can get into other fraternities, traditionally non-Jewish fraternities. So our raison d'etre no longer obtains, and we should move with the times. We should be modern. And you know, Rabbi, I'll tell you, whenever you hear that, move with the times, you always have to look with great caution about advice like that, because it's often when it comes to identity, and when it comes to principle, that's often a dangerous perspective. But sure enough, we said no. We are, yes, even though Jews are getting in elsewhere, we believe in the positive aspects of the mission of Alpha Epsilon Pi, which is to build the Jewish leaders of tomorrow. It's to fight assimilation, which now is rampant. It's an epidemic. And to fight assimilation, to inculcate a Jewish identity and Jewish pride and a commitment to the State of Israel, all while giving our brothers the best friends of their lives and memories to last a lifetime. That's the mission of AE Pi. And once we decided to not only stay with it, but double down on our commitment to the Jewish people, the rest is history. We have exploded in size. We now have 10,000 undergraduate brothers. We are on 180 campuses, over 180 campuses in six countries in the world. And it's all because we stood our ground and we said we are the fraternity of Am Yisrael, of the Jewish people, and that's why we exist, and we do it better than anybody else.
And I have to say, you know, I get a sense of pride from this. Obviously, as a rabbi, it means more to me to hear that, but we'll talk about some of the positives and some of the challenges of that when we come back with Ilan Carr, the past international president of Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity, in just a moment here on Two Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey, Rabbi. Morning.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes, they want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier. You can smell things. You can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
We have 4 stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Cohen Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Cohen and Irma Cohen, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of 4 activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Cohen Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Cohen Foundation Award in 2016, please go to CohenAward.com, CohenAward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is CohenAward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store. You can subscribe, in fact, to our very popular podcast, Moments Top 10 in America. In just 2 days, we'll elect a new president of these United States. We continue now with our 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. Somehow it seems appropriate that in an almost unbelievably ugly presidential election, there was a truly terrible October surprise that involved the lamentable but appropriately named Anthony Weiner. Why should the non-Jews have all the yuckiness in this endless and unendingly distressing election year and a half? Weiner, the former Jewish congressman from New York, failed mayoral candidate, media figure, and sexting addict, recently repeated his extremely distasteful tendency to text his own partially nude photos to underage women. He has now checked into a rehab center for sexting addiction. Who knew those existed? And is now separated from his wife, Huma Abedin, mother of their children. It is that connection that has had tremendous impact on the presidential race. Abedin, a longtime close aide to Hillary Clinton, had many emails with her husband, shared a laptop, and in investigating whether Weiner violated federal crime by again sending out his weird photos to a then 15-year-old girl, the FBI found Huma Abedin's emails, including many from her boss, Hillary Clinton. It's not clear whether these contained classified information or not, but it was that back door that allowed FBI Director James Comey to send an explosive letter to congressional leaders saying he was reopening the investigation into Clinton's famous emails on her private server. And that seemed to shift the attention in this awful election from Donald Trump's serial abuse of women, terrible judgment, inflammatory and dangerous remarks, and complete lack of common decency, back towards Clinton's untrustworthiness, manipulations, and secrecy. And all thanks to Anthony Weiner's addiction to sending out photos of his...
Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer Weiner. If I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
Not so much to love in all of this. What you hear now is the sound of American politics going completely down the drain. And that was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update, or down date, or something. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So you returned recently from a trip to the Balkans, an area where people may not be aware, but there still are Jewish communities. There was a long Jewish history. Tell us what you found.
Right. So I have, for a variety of reasons, old friends scattered throughout the Balkans. And what many people may not realize is that most of the Balkan Peninsula, for a period of centuries, in some cases more than 500 years, was under Ottoman Turkish rule. And to one degree or another, you see that in the architecture, the food, the traditions, whatever. And you see it in the fact that many elements of the Jewish communities throughout the Balkans are Sephardic, and they were invited over by Sultan Bayezid when the Spanish king and queen kicked out the Jews in 1492. So they have a long-standing tradition of speaking Ladino. But then, at various points in history and to different degrees throughout the Balkans, Ashkenazic Jews also came to settle, including in Thessaloniki and Istanbul and Belgrade, where I was, and Dubrovnik and whatever.
Izmir, I mean, actually right. All through that area.
Right. So on this trip, I was in Dubrovnik and Kotor, which are two coastal towns on the Adriatic, both of which were originally built by the Venetians. They were like trading ports. The Venetians had a fleet. They were a commercial maritime empire, and they had like safe havens all along the shores of the Mediterranean. And of course, Venice, as you well know, had a large Jewish population, and all these little towns that were dependencies of Venice also had Jewish populations. So in Dubrovnik, there's a street named the Street of the Jews, and there's an old synagogue, and there's a very, very tiny community of Jews left. Not enough to make a minyan even, but still a historic presence. I think the same is true in all those coastal towns on the Adriatic. Belgrade's a different story. There's a lively Jewish community with a lot of different groups, B'nai B'rith, whatever.
It's a bigger city with a larger
and,
Jewish community.
You know, in the cemetery, you can see as the history of Belgrade changed, and it changed hands from being part of the Ottoman Empire to being an independent country, the way in which people dress changed, because there's photographs on the gravestones. So until the late 1800s, Jews were wearing turbans and robes and looked like Ottoman Turks. And starting in the late 1800s, and certainly throughout the 1900s, Jews are wearing normal, quote-unquote, Western...
European clothing.
Suits and ties, right, and normal hats and whatever. And also, to some degree, names changed. Names changed from being kind of Ladino or Turkic sounding to being Germanic or Polish or Ashkenazic sounding. Community nowadays is mixed. It's lively. It's fairly secular. I've never spent a major holiday there, so I don't know what kind of turnout they would get, but certainly there are lots of Jews there who are aware of the holidays and who wish you Shana Tova and all that. And then, obviously, the biggest of all these communities is Istanbul, which probably has, I don't know, 10 times as many Jews as Thessaloniki, at least, has a fabulous Jewish day school. And just an interesting footnote is that after all the current events, and in spite of what many Americans see and believe to be a fundamentalist dictatorship, Jews are not leaving in droves. If they're leaving at all, it's in very tiny numbers. For a variety of destinations to go settle with family in Israel or New York or Montreal or Paris or wherever. But they're not leaving in significant numbers. And the Jewish community there seems to feel secure in its own future.
Very interesting. And a fascinating Jewish community. I think you mentioned there's a higher immigration rate from the Jews of France than the Jews of Turkey right now. Something to sort of keep in mind.
Right.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We are delighted to welcome our Mivinan Israel Oshrat Bar-El, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So we're in the season of electing leaders here in America. The greatest,
which never ends.
Yeah, it does. As soon as the election is over, they start running for office again. The greatest Israeli leader, the really founding prime minister, is David Ben-Gurion. And Ben-Gurion was a fascinating character. He was known as the old man, the tough guy. He was the pre-state leader of the Yeshuv, who became the obvious choice for prime minister. Everybody that followed him was a protege, more or less. But people know that. But what don't we know about Ben-Gurion?
Yeah, Hazaken, as we call it in Hebrew. Yeah.
Hazaken, the old guy.
That's how Paula called him.
And that's because it's such a polite culture.
Yes, actually.
Founding state culture.
Yeah, you said everything that basically everyone knows.
Yeah.
But what we don't know, the most of the people don't know, that first of all, if we think that the Israeli that are going after army to India, if we think that they invented this trip to India, so we all will be surprised to know that David Ben-Gurion was the first to, you know, being fascinated by the Indian culture and actually finds a lot of, you know, he was big in sport, but not watching sport, doing sport. Every day walking, you know, 7 kilometers, which is, I don't know, 14 miles or so, like day and night.
I don't think it's 14 miles. I think it's 4 miles, but 14 miles sounds better. So.
Yeah, so, but, you know, for him to do it, like, for the rest of his life.
Yeah, to get exercise.
Twice a day.
Right? No matter what else was going on, war, politics, he always worked. Right?
And it's not just he was a sport fan, and he did it for his health,
right?
But he also used it as a strategy. Like, he will do some of his meeting by walking. He will take the toughest partners that come work, and then he will walk faster, and then his partner can't even breathe, not to mention think, or, you know, so done. The meeting was done, and he will get the result that he would like from the meeting.
He was a tough guy.
I'm going to have some of my meeting at the gym at the J, I think.
Okay.
So
I can do that.
That's first. But he also was inspired by the Indian, you know, philosophy and, you know, yoga and stuff like that. He actually practiced it every day. And I don't know if you heard about Feldenkrais.
So I knew some trained, of his students, Feldenkrais.
Yeah, and he was trained by Moshe Feldenkrais, you know, for some back issues he had. And I'm sure everyone knows that he used to stand on his head.
Right, there's pictures. Those pictures are famous. Right.
Like, and there is a model of him at the Chofe Frischmann in Tel Aviv standing on his head. Why? The question is, first of all, he thought he's spending too much time writing and sitting. So
right.
He think that he will be friendly with his heart and not expecting too much of his heart to, you know.
So let the blood go back down to the heart by gravity.
That's
right.
Why he did like a few times a day, and he will encourage his staff to come with him to a different room and do some, you know, exercising and standing on his head. And Paula used to say about him that he's standing on his head and he's making all the country la mode à la roche, which is kind
stand
of
stand on its head.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's have a positive and kind of not so negative. Everything is so that's about, you know, sports and Ben Gurion and things that you didn't know about.
Yeah, not things you knew
and
about.
I have so much more, but maybe we'll save it for next time.
Maybe save it for next time, and I can tell you about my visit to Stable Care sometime. Thanks, Ashrat. We will talk
after the election.
Thank you, Rabbi.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Good morning. Boker Or.
Big event coming up tonight for Tucson Hebrew Academy, but really for the whole Tucson Jewish community. And I think it has greater Jewish implications than that. Tikkun Olam, it's called, right?
Yes.
Perfecting the world,
right,
building the world.
Right, doing our part to make the world a better place.
You guys are honoring Don Baker, the late Don Baker, Lava Shalom, a friend of mine too, who helped really build Tucson Hebrew Academy, but he wasn't the first generation, right?
Right. So THA started in the early 70s at Anshe Israel, which is where my family goes to shul and has for many decades. And Don was part of the leadership that made the decision and actually drove a capital campaign and pulled together the resources and the leadership to start the THA campus where it currently sits. And Don was really a member of this cohort that we see as kind of that second generation of leadership of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. You know, it took the presence and the call from Rabbi Oleski at the pulpit, as I've said many times, and it's a story I love to tell, and a response from the community, from families like Lefkowitz and Singer and Leonard and many others. And they got things going.
So getting that started is critical. Beginning a new program, a new institution, any great Jewish
huge
thing,
amount of work.
Tremendous amount of work, takes great amount of courage. But in some ways, after you've gotten it started, then the hardest thing is passing on that mantle of leadership.
Right. You know, no leader wants to start a great initiative and watch it die after their time at the helm has passed. So for the promise of the concept of legacy, door to door, generation to generation, to really come true at a place like THA, you need the next generation to take the mantle, to stand on the shoulders of the work that you've done. And that's what people like Don Baker and Ronnie Siebold and Randy Emerson did for THA.
They became the next generation. So, and we'll talk about this some next week too. How do you institutionalize that concept that leadership isn't just, oh, I've got a great idea, I'm going to run with it. It's taking somebody else's vision that's begun and furthering it.
Yeah, there's so many aspects to leadership. And, you know, the effective leaders are able to honor the past and see what is relevant from work that was done previously and hone it, refine it, and strengthen it and continue to bring those things forward. So, you know, without the follow-up of future leadership, that first generation of Tucson Hebrew Academy might have just stayed one generation. So the fact that there were these families in the community and the lay leadership and the community leadership that continued to rally around the organization and see it to its next stage is instrumental in THA's survival.
So important. And that event is tonight at the Jewish Community Center.
Jewish Community Center, 5:30 for a cocktail hour, and then dinner, and our event starts at 6:30.
We'll see you then, John.
Thank you so much.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Two rabbis are discussing the decline in morals in the modern world. I didn't sleep with my wife before I was married, says one of them self-righteously. Did you? I don't know, says the other. What was her maiden name? And that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the Torah portion of Lech Lecha, which includes God's great command to Abraham. Lech Lecha me'artzecha me'moladetcha me'beit avicha. Leave. Go from your country, your homeland, and the house of your father to a land I will show you. It's the beginning of monotheism, the belief in one God. It's the beginning of Judaism, and it will prove to be the beginning of our connection to the land of Israel as well. A dramatic and powerful moment. The fascinating thing about Lech Lecha is not that God commands Abram, later to be renamed Abraham, to leave everything he's known. After all, if he is going to create a new religion and remake belief in our world, he will need to leave polytheism and the pagan society that doesn't recognize supreme justice and divine power, a corrupt, dishonest, ethically failing civilization. If you want to live a life of goodness and blessing, sometimes you do need to leave home in order to do it. Abraham picked up and left the sophisticated, morally challenged city-states of Babylon. He journeyed outward to find God and to found a new religion. That journey of differentiation was pivotal to human history. If Abraham doesn't just do what God commands, there is no Judaism or Christianity or Islam or monotheism or Western civilization. But what's most fascinating about Abraham's actions in this week's portion of Lech Lecha is that after God commands him to go, he simply goes without argument or controversy. That strikes me as a very un-Jewish approach. After all, the essence of Jewish culture is argument and discussion. If you were directed to leave everything you'd ever known and told to move somewhere unspecified, wouldn't you complain at least a little? And don't think for a moment Abraham is incapable of arguing with God. In fact, he proves in next week's Torah portion that he'll argue and bargain with God to the last degree, as he does trying to defend the few righteous people of Sodom and Gomorrah. No, something else is at work here, the essential understanding that sometimes you just have to move on, leave what you know, embrace the journey. In order to fully realize who we can become, we must first leave who we have been. It's an exciting, exhilarating, daunting prospect, dangerous but essential. If we can choose to take these first steps, we may, like Abraham, reap similarly rich rewards. In a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Ilan Carr, will explore both the advantages and challenges of representing a Jewish fraternity on college campuses today. Find out what it's like when we come back here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Palestinian terrorist who murdered Daphne Meir, the mother of six, in her West Bank home, was sentenced to life in prison last week. The terrorist, who was just 16 years old at the time he committed the brutal murder, was sentenced by a West Bank military court that also ordered him to pay nearly $200,000 to the family in compensation. The court recommended that the authorities prevent an early release due to the unusually cruel nature of the crime. The Palestinian terrorist was arrested 2 days after the January 17th murder in Otniel, and he confessed to the killing. He was indicted in February, convicted in May of murder and illegal possession of a weapon. Daphne Meir, 38 years old, was stabbed to death at the entrance of her home, fighting off her attacker in an attempt to save three of her children who were in the house. She's the mother of four children and foster mother of two young children. Her 17-year-old daughter was able to give security officials in Israel a description of the assailant, who fled after he was unable to remove the knife from Daphne Meir's body. The young terrorist watched Palestinian television broadcasts inciting him against Israel before he committed the horrific crime. Afterwards, he returned home and spent the evening with his family watching a movie after he committed the murder. He will now serve a life term in an Israeli prison. In other news, the odd cooperative military working arrangement between Israel and Russia with regard to operations in Syria has continued. It was the subject of a high-level military meeting between Russian and Israeli officials at the Foreign Ministry at the end of October, as Russia has expanded its support for the brutal Assad regime's operations against the even more brutal ISIS. The potential for accidental interactions between Russian warplanes and Israeli fighters and anti-aircraft systems has increased. Both sides are eager to avoid any such incidents, and a kind of tactical relationship between Russia and Israel has developed. Israel remains extremely uncomfortable with the military support and materiel Russia has provided to Iran during this war against ISIS, but currently things seem to be developing carefully and respectfully, at least bilaterally, between Russia and Israel. We will stay tuned. And actor-director Mel Gibson says it's time the world moved on from his anti-Semitic tirade in 2006. It's really unfair people are still hung up on his infamous rant, the 60-year-old Gibson said last week, promoting his U.S. release of the film Hacksaw Ridge. In 2006, a drunk Gibson made anti-Semitic remarks when he was arrested for driving under the influence. "Effing Jews," he shouted, "the Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world." 10 years have gone by, Gibson said. "I'm feeling good, I'm sober, all that kind of stuff, and it's a dim thing for me in the past. But others bring it up, which I find annoying, because I don't understand why after 10 years it's any kind of issue." The day after his arrest, the actor apologized for the incident, calling his statements despicable, but the Jewish community wasn't convinced. Abe Foxman, then the director of the ADL and a past guest of Too Jewish, pointed to Gibson's 2004 film, The Passion of the Christ, which played into notions of Jewish culpability for killing Jesus. His tirade finally reveals his true self and shows that his protestations during the debate over his film, The Passion of the Christ, that he is such a tolerant, loving person, were a sham, Foxman said then. Gibson says his record should convince people that his 2006 invective was an isolated incident. "If I was really what they say I was, some kind of hater, there'd be evidence of action somewhere. There never has been. I've never discriminated against anyone or done anything that sort of supports that reputation. And from one episode in the back of a police car on 8 double tequilas to dictate all the work, life's work and beliefs and everything else that I have and maintain for my life is really unfair," Mel Gibson said. On the other side of the ledger, in 2010, 4 years after the anti-Semitic incident, Mel Gibson's ex-girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva claimed he had physically abused her and released a tape on which the actor could be heard making viciously sexist and racist remarks. So maybe forgiveness is not in the cards just yet.
Go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today. Go Cubs, go!
And on a much happier note, mazel tov to Theo Epstein, the Jewish president of the Chicago Cubs, whose victory ended what had become the longest exile in the world, 108 years, by winning the World Series last week. While the Jews' 1,800 years of exile from Israel ended with the 1948 foundation of the State of Israel, the Cubs, over a century without a championship, had truly reached biblical proportions. Theo Epstein has now been the key front office figure in ending two great and very long baseball curses, the curse of the Bambino in Boston and the curse of the goat on Chicago's north side. The Azazel, I guess. Perhaps we can send Theo Epstein to the Middle East now to try to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Ilan Carr is the past international president of Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity, AE Pi Fraternity, the only still officially Jewish fraternity. He is a past regional governor and has been active in AE Pi since he was an undergraduate at Berkeley back in the 1990s. Tell us a little bit about...
1980s, actually, but thank you. I'll take...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm making you younger than you are.
I'll only tell you, you're welcome to do that.
Well, it makes me feel good to know that it was the 1980s, because I was in the 1980s, too, even though I'm, older. It's a long decade. Let's talk a little bit about... the foundation of AE Pi. AE Pi was founded as a Jewish house in New York. Tell us a little bit about that and how that has played into the ideology really all through its history.
Right. So we were founded at NYU. So that's our first chapter. And we were founded because Jews simply were not getting into other fraternities. And so our main founder, the first president of the VAPI, at that time not national president, local president, he actually got a bid because he was a star athlete. And so he was wanted, but his friends didn't get bid. And he said, this is wrong. And the group of them said, we're going to do better. And they met in a restaurant which long ago went out of business, and they and they decided to create another Jewish fraternity. We were not the first; there were others, and that was our first chapter at NYU. Our second chapter was then at Cornell. Our third at the University of Pennsylvania. Our fourth at the University of Illinois, and it went on and on. Emory, we spread to the South, and then eventually to the West with USC. And today we are saturated. It is difficult to find a campus with a Jewish demographic that does not have a strong AAPI chapter, where it's not only strong by numbers, but it's strong because our kids are leading the fight for Jewish identity on campus. They're leading the fight against BDS, the fight for the good name of the Jewish people in the state of Israel. And that is a matter of international policy for us. We don't just have a good time. We fight for the core principles and values and really the survival of the Jewish people in the United States and around the world. And we're so proud that our kids are on the front lines of that fight for Jewish identity and for the state of Israel.
Now, the truth is fraternities compete for pledges for new members. Back when I rushed the fraternity in the late 1970s, rushed fraternities, I had bids for non-Jewish houses, and I knew that although my father didn't want me to join a fraternity at all, he would at least be okay if I joined a Jewish house. And I wonder how often that's still a factor for kids today.
I think it is a factor to one extent or another, especially in an era where the media is very anti-fraternity. There's an anti-fraternity bias in the media. Some of it, by the way, legitimate. I mean, obviously, you know, there in the Greek system in the United States, there are hundreds of thousands of students, and so some of them are going to misbehave. In any group of hundreds of thousands, there are going to be some bad apples.
Especially college-age kids.
Right, especially college-age kids. And sadly, the media is very quick to cover the misbehavior and very slow to cover the amount of money raised for charities and the leadership and the community service and the good citizenship. They don't cover that. And so it's sad, but what it causes is an anti-fraternity bias, and some parents are concerned. Well, you know, is my kid going to be safe, and is this a good thing? Well, it's very different with AAPI, because in a Jewish fraternity, you know, it's different. It's mishpacha, you know, and so parents who might otherwise be concerned usually have those concerns assuaged when their son is interested in AAPI, and they're also typically very proud because, you know, look, I'm a parent, and as a parent, all of us wonder, well, you know, what are our kids going to be like when they're no longer at home? When they leave home, what kind of values will they exude, and what kind of lives will they embrace? All the work we did to inculcate goodness in them, did that work? You know, these are natural questions parents ask, and when a kid who's away from home and not being forced into something by their parents voluntarily says, you know what, I want to make my home with the Jewish people, and I want to be a brother of the international Jewish fraternity, usually that engenders enormous pride in parents who discover, wow, you know, my kid really is proud of who he is and who we are, and that's wonderful. When I see the teary eyes of parents when they come to an event and they see the kind of lives their kids, their sons have built with other Jews on campus, they're so moved. It's very satisfying.
There has been a fair amount of controversy. At least it's hit the forward, which makes it, I guess, officially controversy, about non-acceptance of non-Jews into AAPI. Can you tell us what the policy is officially nationally and how chapters are functioning within that?
Right. So the policy of AAPI has always been, unlike some of the other Jewish fraternities that are no longer around, that used to be restricted to Jews and by bylaws could not accept non-Jews, we were always non-discriminatory. However, our rule was very simple. You can't be an AAPI despite the fact that we're Jewish. You have to be an Apai because we're Jewish. So a non-Jew who might consider Apai has to affirmatively want to be part of the mission of Apai. And the mission of Apai is to fight Jewish assimilation, to build the Jewish leaders of tomorrow, to stand up for and fight for the state of Israel. That's part of our core principles and mission. If a non-Jew wants that, and there are very few who want that, but there are some who do. And if a non-Jew wants to be part of that mission, then we roll the red carpet out for them. And we've not only rushed and pledged and initiated non-Jewish brothers who fit that description, but we've elected them president of our chapters. We've hired them on staff. Literally, we've had AAPI International staff members who travel and advise chapters, including on Jewish identity matters, who themselves were not Jewish, but were passionate about the Jewish mission of AAPI. And so that has always been our policy. But let me tell you about the forward article. We make no apology, and we do not water down the fact that we are a real Jewish organization committed to Jewish principles, and we will not take anybody who doesn't fit the parameters of what is appropriate within AAPI. And we will come down on any chapter that is willing to or show signs of abandoning the Jewish identity of AAPI. We're not going to go the way of other former Jewish fraternities who now call themselves historically Jewish or Jewish founded. We are not only historically Jewish, we're Jewish today, and you bet we're going to stay that way. And if any chapter wants to change that, we're going to come down on them because they have no right to change that.
I want to thank Ilan Carr for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about AAPI and the only officially Jewish fraternity?
Well, we have a website, and it's a good website that tells us all about not only our chapters, but our alumni. And one thing we didn't talk about, Rabbi, is what our alumni are doing. The level of Jewish leadership, it shows that the AAPI experience works because our alumni, and you are a prime example of this, are making a difference for the Jewish people. And so our website is www.aepi.org. That's AEPI.org. And I encourage not only students, but really I encourage anybody to visit our website and learn all the wonderful things that AAPI is doing to ensure the future of the Jewish people, not only in North America, but around the world.
Thank you so much, Ilan. And I'm sure there are even, quickly about alumni, who are the most august alumni that you can name of AAPI?
We have so many, it's literally difficult to even begin that list. But we have captains of industry like Sandy Weil, Sheldon Adelson. We have Mike Levin as well. We have artists. Simon and Garfunkel not only are AAPIs, they were both presidents of their chapters.
At Queens College, I think, actually.
Well, Paul Simon was president at Queens College. Art Garfunkel was president at Columbia University. And some of their first songs were done as AAPI undergraduates when they would get together for our regional conclaves in the New York area and play together. We have pictures of that. And, of course, Gene Wilder, who just died. We have lists of actors and artists and captains of industry and elected leaders, and it's tremendous. But perhaps we're most proud of not only our august alumni that are household names, but we're proud of the thousands and thousands of alumni. We have about 90,000 living alumni. We're proud of the thousands of alumni who are making a difference in their community, their leaders, and their Jewish leaders. They're making time for Federation and for AIPAC and for other Jewish organizations. And that's why when the Jewish world saw what we are doing, not only on college campuses, but what our alumni are doing, we were admitted into the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, the first new member in a long, long time, and the only member ever in its history that is college-based. And so we are now full-fledged members of the Conference of Presidents. We are one of 50 Jewish organizations that set policy for the Jewish world in the United States and around the world, and that's because of the great things that our undergraduate brothers are doing, but also the great things that our alumni brothers are doing.
Thanks again, Ilan. We will hopefully talk again, catch up about AAPI.
I look forward to it, Rabbi. Take care, and Shana Tova to you and to all of our listeners.
When we return on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson, discussing the results of the presidential election, which we will know by then, God willing. And of course, listen to all our Too Jewish podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website and friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from Idan Amedi and his song Chelek Me'azman, Some of the Time. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week all of the time, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Chelek me'azman ayu b'chashashot alma Sh'ratziti l'agid v'lo amarti ulai kvar lo amar B'chalon katan muli bo'a b'panaseh achor איך ביום הם בודדים ואיך בלילה הם שווים לחיות ולפעמים זה גם קורה לי בלילות לחשוב על כל מה שרציתי להיות ולפעמים זה מין חיוך כזה מוכר שעוזר לי להשלים עם שנגמר לפעמים כשסתם צופה על הבנות כל כך קשה לי להחזיק את הדמעות.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.